And that sound means it's time for the magisterial segment known as History Matters with the one, the only Scott Washington, Hillsborough historian. Well, how are you?
If it was just me, this would be awfully lonely, but thank goodness you're here, Aaron.
Yes.
To live in the day.
I don't know what would happen for the other 3.5 hours of the show.
Would you just be in here the whole time?
That's right.
Now we'll have more silence. Brought to you by Top of the Hill.
Top of the Hill, yes.
You know, today is there's some great things going on this week. I want to highlight that Constitution Day is coming up on Sunday.
This Sunday, yeah.
The 17th.
Yeah.
This is the day when Congress had been convened the previous spring to come up with something different than the Articles of Confederation. Mm-hmm. And so George Washington wisely says, okay, everybody stay in, no press, we're not going to be posturing. Yeah. And they come up with this remarkable
document. Let's go back a second. Come up with amendments to the Articles of Confederation was their specific task.
That's exactly right. They
went into Philadelphia, and George Washington said, okay, lock the doors, shut the windows, get the press out. We're getting rid of the Articles of Confederation, guys. We're going to do it before anyone even knows what we're doing.
Yeah. This is a great...
coup d'etat is what this was. Yeah.
This is a wonderful moment in history when they come up with it. Now, of course, in fairness... James Mason would not sign the Constitution as presented because it did not have a Bill of Rights to it. And there are people who thought, no, it's okay. Most of the states have Declaration of Rights, so we're covered. But he felt very uneasy about that and did not. But that's kind of important. Yeah. And something is happening in Hillsborough.
That is true.
On Sunday.
Something's always happening in Hillsborough.
That's right. There's a distinguished speaker, a noted... doctorate person who yes, it's none other than Aaron Keck, Dr. Aaron Keck, in his disguise as a noted American historian, is going to be at Hillsborough in the afternoon. What time does that begin?
I think that starts at 4, if I remember right. And I hope it starts at 4, because that's what I've got down in my notes.
Over at the Hillsborough Presbyterian Church,
yes.
And there'll be a number of other speakers as well.
It's going to be a really cool panel. There's 4 speakers. All of us are sort of members of the media, and we're going to be talking about freedom of the press. That's the Constitution Day theme this year, which is fitting. So it's going to be a really good conversation. Yeah, 4 o'clock at the Hillsborough Presbyterian Church.
That will be fantastic.
Reception afterwards, which I can actually go to this year. Last year, I did this on the Electoral College, and for whatever reason, I had to skip out on the reception, which is the best part.
Oh, well.
I can't remember why that was.
It was a treat.
It was a fun conversation. Yeah, it was really good.
I can say from firsthand experience, if you enjoy Aaron on the air, you will enjoy him in person talking about this because he makes history come alive, and it's so interesting. And I've told him that, Aaron, you could have Alzheimer's and know more about these things than most people. So
it's a big, big topic this year, too.
It's freedom
of the press. Last year it was the Electoral College, which is a little bit narrower.
Right.
Still a lot of directions you could take that, but freedom of the press this year is just there's so much you could talk about, the history of it. I'm planning on talking about threats to the freedom of the press that don't come from government, that come from just sort of society in general, because that's something we've got to be concerned about, too.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Not even necessarily for Constitution purposes, because the Constitution prohibits the government from impeding the freedom of the press.
Right.
There are other agents of power out there other than the government that also have to be watched very closely.
That's right.
So,
and it's not always foreign governments. It can be corporate sponsors.
Yep.
It can be all kinds of things.
It can be a lot of things.
Well, I'm looking forward to, I'm excited just hearing you describe some of those things right there. So that's coming up on Sunday in Hillsborough. Very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a law, a public law that says that any school that's receiving public funding should be presenting something about the Constitution. Now, I'm not sure that
that's
anybody actually does that this much.
No, I do like that because that law exists. Like, if you are a school that receives public funding, you are legally required to talk about the Constitution on this day. P.S. The topic this year is freedom of speech. Like, that's a little bit... I mean, I appreciate but like, it seems like a little bit of a disconnect between you're required to talk about freedom of speech today. I'm not sure.
I would say it's almost a kickoff also to the following month. The Durham County Library System is actually studying every couple of years. They have a Durham Reads Together, and they pick a some source of literature. This year, they're picking the U.S. Constitution.
I like that.
So that should be a kind of a fun month. So yeah. You're the headliner for a whole
there
6 weeks of really interesting kind of discussions about that.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Everyone's invited. Hillsborough Presbyterian
yes.
Church, Sunday, 4 o'clock, reception
oh,
after.
Yeah, you're
four great
it.
Speakers.
It's
or
wonderful.
Three and me. I'm, yeah. I'm not going to call myself a great speaker.
But I will then. Yeah, that's
Scott,
right.
That's why we bring Scott into the studio to be
it's
my
easy.
Hype man before
it's
this thing happens.
Well,
yeah.
You do, everybody who's listened to you enjoy it will concur. And I would say this will be a great afternoon,
yeah.
And you won't want to miss it. This is a pretty interesting week, even in the history, even related to Hillsborough.
Mm.
On September 12th, 1781, we actually have a Revolutionary War battle that takes place in Hillsborough.
Yeah.
And it's when a loyalist, David Fanning, no relation to the Edmund Fanning of Hillsborough, comes in, realizes that this provincial capital where the governor is staying and the other people of heading up the government are there, but the guard that's guarding it is out looking for loyalists. And so they raid the town. There's an actual raging battle. People die defending Hillsborough. They take refuge in the First St. Matthew's Church, which is no longer there, but it's where that Hillsborough Presbyterian Church is now.
Mm-hmm.
And very exciting kind of things. In fact, there's I did some genealogical research, found that one of the people that died defending Hillsborough was named Thomas Freeland, who was related to the later James John Freeland, who helped build the Daniel Boone Village and was a great history.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's just wonderful.
Oh, that's
very interesting. But I don't think a lot of people know that. Yes, you can walk the streets of Hillsborough because the historic district is in the same place with the same street names.
Yep.
You are actually walking in the same streets where these raging battles were going on.
So Thomas Burke was the governor. He'd been governor
yes.
for 3 months. Tell me about Thomas Burke, because
Thomas Burke was a remarkable Renaissance mm-hmm. man, a poet, a medical doctor. He had actually served in the Continental Congress, came back here, and of course, the upshot of this battle, I won't leave you hanging like, well, what happened? Well, the Loyalists take the town by surprise. They take about 200 prisoners, including Governor Burke,
mm-hmm.
and then they leave town. Meanwhile, the militia that had been outside of town looking for Loyalists gets word and decides, let's chase them. But
mm-hmm.
they know it's a large force. They get ahead, and on September 13th, the next day at Lindley's Mill, there's a pitched battle. And unfortunately, the North Carolina forces do not prevail. Governor Burke is still kept prisoner, along with many others, taken down to Wilmington and then down to South Carolina.
Mm.
And not a lot of people know that one of the popular ways to keep prisoners of war was on ships or on islands. And in this case, Governor Burke got the better of it, I guess. He was put on an island. He was told, gave his word, he would not escape. But then after the signing of the surrender of Cornwallis at Yorktown, we think everything's over. No, and it's now, that was in October, now
right.
it's January of 1782. Burke's still there, and there are attempts, according to his accounts, made on his life, so he decides, time to go.
Time to go.
And
wait,
he does
what
escape.
Island was he on?
Oh, gosh.
Was it like out in the Atlantic?
Was no,
it in the
was
Outer
a,
Banks?
It was South
was it
Carolina.
Caribbean? Oh, South
yeah,
Carolina.
South Carolina.
Okay. Sort of one of the coastal islands
yes.
then? Okay.
And he makes his escape, comes back to Hillsborough, thinking he'll get a hero's welcome, but
uh-huh.
instead, the uproar, and you imagine that this would be political folks, said, wait, you gave your word? And oh, my
oh,
gosh,
yes.
your word is your bond. And there's uproar about that.
Instead Heaven
saying,
forbid you have
yeah.
a conversation
oh,
with
can,
the other party,
yeah,
right?
He cannot
yeah.
live it down. He can't run.
Mm-hmm.
For
Breitbart.nc was writing
exactly.
all kinds of
oh my gosh.
Scathing editorials.
So
yeah.
he does keep on drinking and dies. And his graveyard is now in Hillsborough, just outside there. A little hard to get to, but interesting. But that's, you know, one of those kind of interesting things about saying
yeah.
that the stuff that we fight for, and of course the Constitution, that's 1787, that's, you know, half a dozen years after these mm-hmm. events. But still, it's not that far away from them.
Yeah.
And these are consequential issues. And by the time the Constitution is developed, the leaders of the country know that they've got some serious issues. The Articles of Confederation were wonderful if you, when the states were fighting individually and collectively against the British. But now that the war had ended, they still face these massive superpowers, France, England, Spain, and yet they did not have a good way to have a standing army.
They're bickering among themselves.
That's right. States
different
could come
currencies.
Out
of,
states could just say, well, we're going to opt out of that treaty now.
Yep.
Yeah, this doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
So there was a real urgency to develop
that. Or Rhode Island treaty. What's a treaty?
Oh,
we don't,
yes,
yeah,
good old
we
Rhode
don't need
Island.
Your stinking treaties.
So that's a kind of an important thing to think about.
That's fascinating. That was this week.
Yeah, this
All
week.
Right.
So when we look at things, we kind of go, okay. Now, another thing that happens this week, and I don't know why that some of this early history pops up, but I really enjoy it. 1782, September 16th, is when the Great Seal of the United States,
yes,
the eagle with the motto,
E pluribus unum,
out of many one, is first used. And that goes back to, I think, 1776 when it was first being developed.
Mm.
But that is still an important thing that even though I think the Statue of Liberty symbolizes in so many ways.
It would be a little bit different of a seal if Benjamin Franklin had gotten his way and
with
we had the turkey instead of the eagle.
Well, might have had Thanksgiving every month.
Yeah.
Hey, let's celebrate.
There you go, yeah.
Well, he was celebrating, of course, the wild turkey.
Right,
he would
right.
Have had some, he tried to... make a good case.
We have our own way of celebrating wild turkeys
Luckily, there are these moments when collectively people go, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe Benjamin Franklin had some real great ideas.
Yeah.
Turkey as the national bird, not in the top 10.
It couldn't be defended.
Yeah.
Another one is September 16th, 1620.
I was looking at the
Isn't
page and I was like, is this the one you're going to go with next?
Oh my gosh, this is when the Mayflower set sail from Plymouth, England with 102 pilgrims.
Yep.
Now, one thing I did not know about was that they were heading for, well, of course, the whole eastern seaboard was called Virginia.
Right.
So they were aiming a little more south, but according to at least one account, there is some sense that storms blew them off course and they ended up at Cape Cod.
Interesting.
I just find that on December 21st.
Yep.
Now, to those of you who think, oh, yes, then they had time to celebrate Christmas. No.
No.
That's when they got off and started building.
Right. They were Puritans.
They were Puritans.
Celebrating Christmas is evil.
That's right.
They were Puritans. They were
opposed
to that.
That was played down.
Yeah. Oh, can you imagine being on a ship sailing across the Atlantic to parts unknown in the 1600s anyway? It's not a particularly great life. Imagine being on that ship in December in New England, sailing into Cape Cod. That had to have been freezing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there in 1602, Bartholomew Gosnold does something amazing. He sails in a small boat directly across. Now, this had not been done. Most people went farther north or farther south.
Right.
He takes the gutsy route of, let's try going across.
Okay.
He does. He lands at in New England. He's looking for a route going inland, though there is none. But it's near where Martha's Vineyard is, a little island called Cuttyhunk today. He named it Elizabeth Island, not necessarily after the queen, but maybe his daughter.
Cuttyhunk was definitely
that's
a
right.
much
well,
better
it's called
name
Puka
for that
Hunkano was the original name, but now it's called Cuttyhunk. But he names Martha's Vineyard, and he names Cape Cod. So there was some element of knowing where this area was that the pilgrims end up landing 18 years later.
Yep.
And in fact, in 1602, the most amazing thing about that journey is the men say, no, we're not going to stay here, and they sail back to England. And then you have the Jamestown expedition. Mm-hmm. Gosnold's a part of that. He dies and is buried in Virginia still.
Yeah.
But it set the tone that, yes, this was a doable trip. And I'm not sure, like what you said, imagine boarding that boat. I'm not sure you think this is a doable trip.
Yeah, this is sort of an act of desperation at this point. Like, we're leaving and risking our lives for this cross ocean voyage.
Right.
You're really, that's making a huge break from Britain and sailing to parts unknown. That's
and
a really significant thing.
Of course,
thing.
As we all know the story of the pilgrims when they got here, they were not familiar with the weather or the seasons, and that was a very hard winter. It was
easy. It stuck. 10 years later, Sunday, September 17th, on September 17th in history, 1630, Boston gets its name for the first time.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. I mean, what did they call it before then? Beantown or what? I don't know.
Good God, it's
cold,
Bill.
It's like Hillsborough was Childsburg and Corbinton. They first thought orange, but no. I mean, they would have had the lock
that
on
is a good question.
Right there, but no.
Plymouth, maybe? They call it before 1630? They had 10 years to come up with something.
Well, you know, and looking forward you mentioned the September 17th. 1796 is when George Washington gives his farewell address as president, warning against a large public debt, a large military, and minority interest controlling government.
Yep.
Wow, that's still pretty apt.
It is also interesting that he gives the farewell address on September 17th, 1796. Yes. He's president for another 6 months, right?
Yeah.
Until March of the next year.
He's putting things in perspective. I think he's preparing people for what's
going to happen. Gotcha. Boston's early European... If Wikipedia is to be trusted on this one, Boston's early European settlers had first called the area Tri-Mountain. After its three mountains, only traces of which remain today, but later renamed it Boston after Boston in Lincolnshire, England, which was the origin of several prominent colonists.
Wow. Now, here's a moment where I'm learning something as much as the listeners are.
Ooh, and it was not renamed on September 17th, 1630. It was renamed on September 7th, 1630.
Oh.
But that day is September 17th week in history,
there is the Gregorian calendar comes into play.
British government in 1750-something?
1752.
Yes.
And that's when
the move to the Gregorian calendar.
That's right.
And we lost 10 days.
That's right. September 2nd, the very next day becomes September 17th, or is it? What is it?
14th, something like that.
See, we're still looking.
Yeah, 1752, September 2nd, and then the very next day was September 14th because we just skipped over 11
days. Right.
Yeah.
So that's a kind of an amazing thing, and people felt cheated, but the calendar was off significantly, and that affected planting cycles, all kind of things. In fact, it wasn't, and it may have been around that time, I'll have to find the date, but the new year was often celebrated in the spring.
Right.
Around the spring
festival.
That's right. And then it turned out, Great Britain finally said, no, January 1st, that's when we're going to start the calendar. Everything starts then. We don't care about the equinox. That's when it's going to be.
I wonder why that is. Like, January 1st is just such a weird day.
It is.
For that to be the first day on the calendar. Because there's nothing, the spring festival, like spring equinox, the festival, like all the buds are coming up, and that's the start of the year. Like, that seems more correct.
I agree.
I don't know.
Maybe it gave some of the people to do because they were kind of depressed, you know, on Eastern Seaboard or in the... in Europe, where you had dark nights, then you kept celebrating.
That's
traditional.
Fair, it does end up working out when we actually do start celebrating Christmas. Now we can have all of the holidays together.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's very economical.
Yes.
That way, which I'm glad to know. But here's a kind of a fun one.
Yeah. I've only got a couple minutes left, so...
All right, here's one that I think is important for... Well, it's not important, but it's just kind of goofy.
Mm.
September 14th is when the first object to strike the moon made by people, Soviet Lunik 2, launched 2 days earlier, strikes the moon. So somewhere up there, you know, it's been pristine.
Yes.
And somebody says, let's see if we can hit the moon. Nalfadanya. And now, as a counterpoint to this, 1814 is when Francis Scott Key writes the poem that becomes the national anthem, the Star-Spangled
Banner.
Yep.
Did the Russians actually intend to hit the moon with that thing? Or were they looking at it and going, oh, God, get out of the moon! And then just, like, everyone just looks at it in horror and then just sort of slowly backs out of the room.
I'm sure there's somebody saying, yeah, we meant that.
Yeah. No, of course.
Hey, bullseye! I don't know. That's a very good question. See, now we all have something to look forward to researching and finding out.
Oh, man. All right. That is History Matters for this week. We got time for one more. What do you
Okay, well, I want to say about Dame Agatha Christie, a mystery author. And I love this. She was born in 1890. Her literary career began when her sister challenged her to write a mystery in which the identity of the culprit couldn't be guessed. Mm. Now, isn't that a great kind of a challenge?
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just shows you that there can be all kind of interesting things when it comes to art. One last one would be, of course, Michelangelo's David, which began in 1501, September 13th. Of 1501, and it wasn't completed to 1504. Art takes time. Good stories take time. So does history. History matters.
Absolutely. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron. Look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
I'll see you on Sunday.
Oh, this will be exciting.
Awesome.